Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, gather round the radio. It's time now for another installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. My name is Michael Harrison. It's my privilege to serve as anchor of the show. It's an ensemble program, lots of good people involved. And the host of the program is Carol Marks. Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues, and she's a champion in the battle against ageism. And let's kick this hour off with Carol Marks in conversation with Teo Penglis. He's a world traveler, and he's known for his portrayal of Victor Cassadine on the ABC soap opera General Hospital, and is going to talk to Carol about his new book. It's titled Places, The Journey of My Days, My Lives, published by Open Road Media.
And you had so many interesting experiences because while you were in New York working as an apprentice and teeth dealer and studying acting at night, you had the most incredible experience of having tea one-to-one with Jackie Kennedy. So how extraordinary was that? And how did it happen?
Well, you know, it was just by accident. I was 21 years old, sitting at the desk. Claudette Colbert, the wonderful actress, my boss was very friendly with. She had a couple of paintings she wanted copied, a Utrillo and a Monet, and she said the Barbados climate could ruin the paintings. And so my boss, Robert Ellsworth, who's still alive today, he came and brought her in, and she thought I was rather pretty. She said to Robert, "Why don't we bring him? Why don't we take him for lunch?" And Robert said, "No, he's got work to do." And I said, "Oh, I'd love to come to lunch." And he said, "No." So I was a little bit peeved about the experience. But while I was sitting there feeling sorry for myself, there was a knock on the door because it was only for by appointment only, and so. I opened the door, and there was Jacqueline Kennedy with her two bodyguards. And she said to me, "I'm terribly sorry. I didn't have an appointment, but I've heard so much about the gallery. Could I come in and have a look?" And I said, "Certainly." So she came in, and I asked if she wanted tea, just to be a gentleman at the time. You know, we were gentlemen in those days. So she said, "Yes, I would love." So I asked the Japanese houseman upstairs to bring tea, and because I was only an apprentice, he thought it was a joke. And he started laughing at me when I said, "We'd like tea for two." So he came down in the elevator in his shorts. And when the doors opened, she passed, and he just gasped.
I bet.
And he went straight back up, put on his uniform, brought the best silverware down. I'm now in the gallery in the back, and I'm telling her, because I was a history buff. We had the best collection of Southeast Asian sculpture in America. I used to sit on the only pair of Queen Anne sofas in America, and so we sat there, and she said, "Tell me about these pieces." And, of course, I opened it up by saying that the Chinese always believe that the spirit of the artist always is with their creation. And so I must have spoken about 20 pieces, mainly Cambodian, Vietnamese, and Chinese pieces. There was a tomb piece she loved very much, I remember. It was from the 4th century A.D., and so we sat there for that hour, and then she left. She thanked me so much, and she'd seen a head that she liked, which at that time was around $40,000. And so when she left, my boss came in and said to me, "So, did anybody important come in?" And I said, "Yes, Jacqueline Kennedy." He goes, "Oh, sure, sure, sure." And he kept walking up the stairs, disappearing into his office, like it was a joke. So 2 weeks later, Jacqueline Kennedy called and asked for me. And here I was, the apprentice, being asked by Jacqueline Kennedy if she wanted to buy a piece of art. So he wanted to take over. He wanted to bring her in as a client. And she said, no, you don't understand. I want to speak to Teo. So my boss came down screaming at me afterwards, telling me, why didn't I tell him? And that was the story of Jacqueline Kennedy. And I sold her a piece of art. And she was the lady. And I remember the way she was dressed in pale blue and in that suit and that little hat. And
very intelligent.
She was a classy.
Yep, she sure was. And what an experience. And then when you were in Los Angeles, you pursued directing in the theater and accepted roles in film and television, and you first appeared on General Hospital, and now you're back on General Hospital playing the oh-so-mesmerizing Victor Cassadine. So how does it feel to be back on General Hospital after, what, 30-some years?
Well, You know, there's something about, and we've talked, and you talk about it, and this thing of ageism.
Right.
And what I realized, when I came to this country, one of the things I looked forward to was looking at the great actors that we had. And I remember even John Gielgud, Ralph Richardson, Melina Mercouri, all those wonderful actors that I was introduced to. And I thought to myself, my God, to become that. And so there's something to attain to. And then I found out, as I was getting older, and with the way things were taking place in this country, that suddenly you're becoming too old to play the romantic, as if it didn't exist within our age group. And so all they were interested in were the kids. And I thought, God, they're not as trained. They're not as experienced. They don't have much to contribute. So their insights are very limiting. They're young because they're young, and we've all been there. It's not like, you know, we're disassociating ourselves. We've been there. But that was part of the early progress. And you always look forward to seeing those who did it better, or you listen to those who knew more. So now that I've gone back to General Hospital to your question,
right,
it's kind of interesting because I remember, even when I was on Days of Our Lives, suddenly the producer said, he'd say to the young actor, go and watch the way he does monologues. Or go and watch him in the way he plays his villain. It's not on the nose. So going back now, here I am, you know, in a senior situation. But at the same time, what I had when I was there in the early 80s, as opposed to what I have now, is the knowledge I gained along the way and all the experience. So my strut is different. My entrances are different. My composure is different. It's not pretense. It's now ingrained in me, having experienced all that. So it's a kind of revelatory part now for me because I can play authority. It's not something I'm acting. It's what life's experience has given me. And having gone through all those journeys of mine and come across so many obstacles that I had to overcome. But I just feel all that knowledge now is, and that's the great part of getting older. If anybody wants to know and they get upset about getting older, the knowledge, the what you understand, what you sustain with, how you can spend time on your own without worrying about loneliness or that you have to jack up your life because, you know, it needs to be more entertaining. That's part of the beauty of getting older. And
other cultures realize that. You know, other cultures revere their elders, as you must have found out during your many travels.
Oh. I mean, God forbid, if I went to Greece and spoke to an elder, or man or woman, they would scream at me in disgust with my attitude. There's just something natural. I mean, I have nephews who are, you know, on occasion I have to remind them who they're speaking to. I mean, if we don't know the different levels in which we go through in life, then we're going to miss out on the understanding of life's purpose. And so tone is very important.
Absolutely. And, you know, your book, The Way You Traveled Solo, and the exciting things that you did make your memoir about traveling, you know, so unique. And one journey you took, I mean, I just enjoyed reading about it so much because you actually drove to St. Catherine's Monastery at the foot of Mount Sinai where Moses went, and you actually came across the burning bush. So what was that experience like? Because it was not an easy thing to get to St. Catherine's Monastery.
Well, it's an 8-hour trek from Cairo. The first time I did it, I took my mentor with me, my spiritual mentor. And he'd never been out of the United States, and he was a great teacher to me. And so I had made quite a bit of money in my field, and so I said to him, let me take you. And he couldn't get over that someone would do that. I said, no, let's go, you and I, and climb the mountain. So we crossed. The terrain is really kind of boring, and because it's just sand and different, there's no remnants of the past history that you would think would have existed. And so when we got there, the monastery is what's to me extraordinary. It's when you think of when it was built, all those centuries ago, and even Napoleon had had fixed part of a wall. But you know, you walk in there, and there's the burning bush, a plan that's been in existence for thousands of years. And what's interesting over the centuries, because people are always gnawing at it and pulling it, it's developed these thorns. So the burning bush now, when you grab it, which I didn't realize, has all these thorns on it. So I cut my fingers when I grabbed at it. So the church has cut it up to 7 feet where people can't do that anymore. It's almost sacrilegious, I suppose, because it's such a sacred spot. But what's in that monastery, when you think of all those monks who have died within, because that monastery since the 6th century has never been abandoned. And Bedouins look upon it as a sacred site. And there's second greatest library there outside of the Vatican. And but they bury their monks within the monastery. And then because of the lack of land, they then, after a number of years, take the bodies out, the skeletons, and then just store them in a room. And they're all sitting there enjoying each other's company.
Wow.
But I suppose to some people it might be a little on the macabre side. And then there was the climb. The climb is about 4.5 hours, which you do at 1 o'clock in the morning, so that at dawn, when you reach the top, that light that you're waiting to be embraced by hits you.
That's soap opera star, traveler, and author Teo Penglis in conversation with Carol Marx. His book is titled Places, The Journey of My Days, My Lives, published by Open Road Media. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, will continue right here in just a moment.
A domain name is your key to doing business around the world, right from your office, living room, or even your couch. And finding the right name is as easy as a domain name search at hostingforcheap.com. Just enter the domain you want in the search box, and we'll give you the results, along with similar domains you may not have considered. Most people looking for goods or services start on the web. Unfortunately, many small businesses can't afford to pay someone else to build their website. That's where hostingforcheap.com comes in. We can show you how to create a website for yourself, because hostingforcheap.com isn't just about domain names. It's a one-stop shop for anything you need to get online, from building your own website to attracting new customers to securing their data when they make a purchase. Hostingforcheap.com has you covered from the moment you decide you want to put your business on the web. That's hostingforcheap.com. Hostingforcheap.com. Hostingforcheap.com.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and it's time now for a conversation with Ethan Behrman. He's a nationally syndicated radio host and information technology consultant. He was recently named as one of the Heavy 100 in Talkers magazine, and he's going to talk about his recent trip to the warfare taking place in Israel. Ethan Behrman, welcome back to the U.S. You were in Israel. You were there during the height of the Gaza turmoil as a radio talk show host on assignment to broadcast back to the United States. What were your general impressions of this trip?
Well, it was an absolutely eye-opening adventure to be in Israel for the first time, and in particular, of course, as you mentioned, to be there during Operation Protective Edge, which is essentially war. But my first impression really was how different things are on the ground in Israel, in the West Bank, on the border with Gaza, in Jerusalem, across the country, so different from how it is generally reported here in the United States.
How so?
Well, most importantly, what I found, first off, was that, you know, we hear words like apartheid. I just simply didn't see that. I saw an integrated, open society in Israel of people from all walks of life, different ethnicities, different religions, different cultures that were in harmony side by side, all wanting peace. And venturing off into the West Bank, I saw the same thing there, including the Palestinian Arabs and their desire for peace with their Israeli neighbors. And again, we all have these same basic human natures where we want to provide for our families, we want a roof over our head, and we want to feel safe in our homes. That was really no different in Israel, in the West Bank, and even along the border with Gaza as artillery shells were flying. That's ultimately what the people that I encountered actually wanted. And that's just not what we're hearing. And by the way, the whole idea of apartheid I found to be absurd in the West Bank. If you've ever been to the U.S.-Mexico border, like coming back from Tijuana in California, that border is so much more severe, so much more difficult, so much more armed than the wall in Jerusalem. It was actually shocking.
Isn't that amazing that the border that has the reputation in the press of being porous is more severe than the border in a place where we are told it's like apartheid? I have been to Israel in the last 10 years four times on trips similar to yours, fact-finding missions to broadcast back to the United States. And I have to concur with your observation, and I'm glad that you answered the question with that as the primary point, the first thing that you brought up in terms of what you discovered, the eye-opening discovery, is that there is not this atmosphere of hatred and hostility between the people of these various sects and ethnicities in Israel. They work together, they hang out together, they go to the hospital together. Most of the people, I concur, that are either Palestinian, Israeli, Jewish, Christian, Arab, Russians, all kinds of, it's a melting pot, all kinds of people, they basically get along in harmony and want peace. My opinion, and tell me whether or not you found this for yourself, because I haven't been there this time around, and things do change, so you have an updated version of it. I found that most of the hostility is caused by the extremists on both sides who don't want peace at any cost and will do whatever they can to stir up trouble.
That's exactly right. So, again, meeting and encountering Palestinians and Arabs, the vast majority want peace. It is absolutely the ideological extremists. We have the Hamas and the Palestinian Islamic Jihad. But I would add into that the Palestinian Authority leadership as well, because even within the West Bank, there's great prosperity among the Arabs that have opened up and are integrated and working with the outside world. Yet there still continues to be a political leadership in the West Bank who is doing very well financially by keeping a percentage of their population essentially subjugated and used to receive funding and sympathy from world powers in the United Nations that they then are able to, you know, essentially skim some of that money. I passed by, and we actually stopped and took some pictures of this gated community, Palestinian Arab gated community in the West Bank that would have been in the nicest suburbs of New York, LA, Dallas, you know, DC. It was a gated community of five-story mansions exclusive to Palestinian Arabs. So there were millions of dollars invested in each of these homes in this gated community. So the money is there. The key is why is there this inequality? Why is there this disparity? And then furthermore, what is the objective with journalists in the world not presenting this more broad perspective? What is the incentive by media in particular to present these harsh, biased views? That is the part that is maybe confusing on some levels and a little less confusing when you start thinking about money and bias.
Well, also the role of anti-Semitism in our history and how insidious it can be. From that point, and because we only have a certain amount of time left, you went on the radio all around the country. You blogged. You have on your website accounts of this trip. You broadcast on stations on the West Coast, stations on the East Coast, and in between. And what kind of reaction have you gotten from listeners for taking this position?
It's interesting. You know, the first thing I've gotten back from listeners is how glad they were that I went to provide this unique perspective on what is going on in Israel and during this conflict. A lot of thanks from radio hosts, from listeners, people that were very glad to hear this perspective. And, for example, I want to give you one example. I was live on the air in San Francisco in the infamous hill in Stair Road that overlooks Gaza with a morning show there when this tremendous volley of artillery, it might have been tanks as well, there was just massive explosions that happened around me. And it actually cut out my call back to the United States. And then I came back about 15 minutes later, and the morning co-host, this young lady, was in tears. She was worried that I had died. But people, it was very powerful radio to be presenting this firsthand observation of what was going on and discussions with people on the ground. And people ultimately were quite grateful to see this perspective. On the other hand, I would like to just add, though, sometimes people don't want to hear another viewpoint. And, for example, two of my websites were attacked multiple times by Internet hacktivists during my time in Israel for reporting back live. I had a couple of massive what are called distributed denial of service attacks on my websites that I had to deal with because some people just don't want another truth out there.
Fascinating stuff, and I certainly applaud your effort and the work. You did this on your own. You went there, and you also were very generous with your broadcasts, not only to the stations at which you work, but to other stations that that requested for you to come on and give your opinion, as you're doing with me here on A Touch of Gray. Ethan Behrman, we do appreciate you joining us. Keep up the good work. You're a great broadcaster and a credit to our community. Thank you.
Michael Harrison, thank you so much. Thanks for having me on the show. It's great to be with you here on A Touch of Gray.
A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues right here in just a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security websites. Pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving. According to the U.S. Department of Energy, speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray. check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we're joined by Kevin Casey, our senior correspondent, who's also the vice president and executive editor of Talkers Magazine at Talkers.com, the trade publication in talk radio. Kevin, I understand in the talk radio industry, as a co-member of the Talker staff, that radio stations around the country are trying real hard to be able to serve the public during crises, such as the earthquake we recently had, or storms, hurricanes, electric outages. What's going on in radio?
Well, they're very concerned about it, because as most of our listeners know, the days of full newsrooms in radio stations are long gone. But there are things that they can do, and smart operators are figuring this out, that if they have a plan ahead of time, when there's an emergency, how they can bring in all of their staff, that includes salespeople, secretaries, etc., they can act as the type of system that's necessary to warn the public and give them the information they need. And this is something that these sorts of incidences are making stations more aware of, and the smart ones are planning for the future.
Well, you certainly have explained it very well. It seems that there are constant crises. The earthquake, then there's a hurricane, and then there's a disturbance. I mean, some of the, you know, as the civil unrest in Ferguson, it comes from so many places, and radio does have a vital role in it, and it makes me proud to be part of radio, and even more importantly, as you just pointed out, it's great that radio is concerned about maintaining that position as a first responder with information to help people during tough events. Kevin Casey at Talkers.com, managing the executive editor of Talkers and a senior correspondent here on A Touch of Gray. I'm Michael Harrison, and we'll be joined by Steve Wiseman in just a moment.
Did you know An estimated 16 million Americans suffer from a chronic inflammatory facial condition called rosacea, and most of them don't know it. Often mistaken for acne, there are many signs and symptoms of rosacea besides facial redness, pimples, and visible blood vessels. Other symptoms may include burning, stinging, swelling, and even enlargement of the nose. Rosacea can also affect the eyes, causing a bloodshot appearance and irritation that could lead to vision loss. Any one of these signs and symptoms can mean rosacea, and without medical help, it can become increasingly severe and wreak havoc on your personal and professional life. Rosacea typically appears any time after age 30. So if you experience any sign of rosacea, see a dermatologist for diagnosis and treatment. Or for more information, visit the National Rosacea Society at rosacea.org.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to GoDirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Continuing now with A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor seat, and our guest is Steve Wiseman, our senior correspondent. He's an attorney, a professor at Bentley University, an anchor on this very program, A Touch of Grey, and he's written a new book. I have told our audience hundreds of times over the years that you are an expert on so many of the topics we talk about on this program, and that you have a specific expertise in fraud and scams, and so many of those dangerous, dastardly deeds that are lurking out there in the forest, particularly in cyberspace, and that you have a new book titled Identity Theft Alert. More than 200 million people at risk right now, it says on its cover. Identity Theft Alert, 10 rules you must follow to protect yourself from America's number one crime, identity theft. And Steve, I'll tell you, it's kind of scary. Now, people should be scared, shouldn't they?
They should. You know, my silly little mantra is things aren't as bad as you think. They're far worse. In fact, when you look at identity theft as a crime, believe it or not, there is more money lost to identity theft than all other property crimes combined. I mean, it's just absurd. And it is getting worse. You know, just recently we had Russian hackers who stole data on 1.2 billion people. I mean, it's actually a third of the internet users were hacked and in danger of identity theft by these Russian hackers. So it's, you know, I kind of almost like it as, you know, identity theft can be high-tech, low-tech, or no-tech. But at the high-tech level, it's sort of like in sports when leagues are trying to crack down on steroids. The abusers are always just a little bit ahead of the good guys who are trying to clamp down. And that's what it is with these malware and viruses. So, yeah, it's dangerous out there, and the threats are very real.
Now, you have 10 rules you must follow to protect yourself, and I'm not going to go through the 10, but rather encourage people to buy the book and therefore have a good, clear definition of what these 10 things you can do are to protect yourself from identity theft. But on a broad strokes level, just a theoretical or philosophical question, is there ever going to be a remedy for this? Is this the Achilles heel of the digital age? And a third part of this broad question is it safe to say that somebody's listening or watching or reading or checking out our personal stuff no matter what we do, and that we only can hope that they don't choose to, you know, execute some kind of a crime against us?
Well, you know, there's a lot of stupid out there. And when the internet was first being developed by former Vice President Al Gore, he did discover it.
Mm-hmm.
But when the internet was first being used, people didn't, you know, I think somewhat naively, did not build in sufficient security because they really didn't think about how it could be abused. And I'll give you a good example of that, and that's something that is going on now, and that is what we call the Internet of Things, which is my phone is synced up to my car, and my car can get messages from my automobile manufacturer. I can do all kinds of stuff through it. However, the security isn't there, and it has been shown that cars can be actually remotely hacked and controlled. You can actually take over the steering, the brakes, this kind of thing. Your refrigerator, your smart refrigerator, or the thermostat that you can manipulate from afar, that can actually get into your computer banks and make you a victim of identity theft. So the bad news is there was not enough planning done. The good news is that the good guys are seeing that this is so, and so this is being built in. We're now learning that we need more than just passwords. We're going to need biometrics, and steps are being taken. That's the good news. The bad news is that it's going to be worse before it gets better, and that the best place to look for that helping hand is right at the end of your own arm. And that's why in the book, you know, and we use the catchy 10, but there are probably literally hundreds of things that people could do. We just didn't want to, you know, scare people. And often we are our own worst enemies. Now, I'll give you an example. The recent sad passing of Robin Williams. There are scams out there now where someone will receive a text message, an email, a post on their Facebook page appealing to probably the lowest common denominator in some senses, unreleased photographs from the scene of the suicide or police videos. And people will click on those. And when they do, they invite in the malware into their computer, into their smartphone, into their laptop that steals all of their information, makes them a victim of identity theft. So we need to be a little bit smarter in the way that we use technology. And what's kind of interesting is the malware that was used against Target and government agencies has to get implanted in there, and it's done in the same way that I was just talking about the scams with Robin Williams. They find an employee who clicks on a download and winds up having this malware infiltrate the computers of the big company, and they're in. So we just need to be a little bit smarter in how we're using technology.
Sounds to me being a little bit smarter is to stay off the internet unless you need to be there. I'm sorry, it sounds terribly complicated.
Well, you know, here's the problem, Michael. That is, let's say it's something like banking. I happen to do my banking online. You're actually safer if you do it properly online than you are by mailing a check. Lately, and like I said, the identity theft is high tech, low tech, and no tech. There have been a large number of instances of identity thieves stealing mail from public mailboxes, as well as private mailboxes, where people will put their mail out into their mailbox. They flip up that little red flag to notify the mail carrier to pick it up, but it also notifies the identity thief. But even the regular mailboxes, the identity thieves are going, they're breaking in there. So let's say they get your credit card payment with your credit card bill in there. First of all, they're going to send a notice to your credit card company and change the billing address to give them like 2 or 3 months before many people will recognize it. Then they'll take your check and they'll counterfeit it and get it to your bank account. So it's actually, if you take the steps to protect yourself, you're probably better off online than you are in the real world.
How come more people aren't suffering from this identity theft, considering how loose and how lax people are in using the internet?
You know, it is. Some of the people aren't even aware of it.
That's sort of my first question was,
yeah.
Are we carrying this bug in our system, you know, and just by the grace of the fact that we ain't got that much money or we're not important enough to have our identity stolen, that we get by? Or I've heard stories that there are the Mexican mafia, whatever that is, are taking 5 cents a day out of your bank account, 10 cents a day out of like millions of people, and you never notice there's this erosion going on. I've heard that said. I mean, what's the reality of that?
Well, the reality, that part, probably not so accurate, but it's not too far from the truth. First of all, what happens is, let's say, take Target, where you've got millions and millions of identities that were compromised. What happens is, the bad guys go on to, they have websites, they have black market websites where they will sell that information to other identity thieves. And one of the things that they'll do is they'll test out a card. And they will put on a small charge, maybe not so much pennies, but around $9.95 seems to be the magic number that people often don't pick up and just figure it's nothing. And the bill is made out so it sounds like something that, you know, may be legitimate on your bank account or on your credit card. And they get away with this for long periods of time. Mm. The real time bomb when it comes to identity theft, and this is something where actually I'm working on legislation here in Massachusetts because only a few states have it, is children's identity theft. Kids get their identities stolen, and what happens is you steal the identity of a six-year-old, they don't find out until perhaps they're applying for financial aid for college, buying a first car. So you've got like 12 years of abusing their identity, which is going to make it so difficult for them to get a loan, get financial aid, rent an apartment, get a job, buy insurance. All of these things where identity theft makes a problem. So this is a real, real serious problem, children's identity theft. And like you're saying, people don't even know about it for years.
Mm. In conclusion, is law enforcement stepping up? I mean, what do they ever catch these guys? And if they do, what do they do to them?
You know, part of the problem is a lot of this is international. And there has been great difficulty in getting cooperation, particularly from hot spots of identity theft such as Russia. However, what is starting to happen is law enforcement is reaching out, and as a matter of fact, American authorities grabbed a Russian on vacation in Guam. Russia is saying he's been kidnapped, but he was just arraigned in Seattle. So law enforcement has not yet managed to coordinate their efforts sufficiently to combat it, but they are getting much better, and as a matter of fact, I would say even much better over just the last couple of years.
So the penalties are harsh if they do get you?
Well, that's the interesting thing. They're somewhat harsh, but This is also a reason why American organized crime has gotten into identity theft, particularly income tax identity theft and other forms, because it's easy to accomplish. Your chances of getting caught aren't that great. And even if you do get caught, right now the penalties aren't quite as severe as they should be.
Maybe we should go into this business as opposed to protecting.
There have been people who've looked at my books and said, it's a how-to.
Oh, so my gosh.
You've got to be careful with that.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Well, listen, you are the expert on this, and I highly recommend this book. Highly recommend it. First of all, Steve has a website that I talk about every week on Touch of Gray. It's scamaside.com. I encourage you to visit it. But more specifically, Steve, how can people go about picking up a copy of Identity Theft Alert, published by Prentice Hall?
Easiest way is you can go to scamaside.com and just click on the link to Identity Theft Alert, or I'd suggest go to Amazon. It's quickest, it's cheap. Identity Theft Alert, Steve Wiseman, click them in, and you'll have it in a couple of days. And believe me, you will be happy you do.
No question about it, Steve. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Again, the book is titled Identity Theft Alert, 10 Rules You Must Follow to Protect Yourself from America's Number One Crime, published by Prentice Hall. For more information, go to scamaside.com. Steve Wiseman returns to discuss a Comcast-related scam. That's next on A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps, so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. And now we come to the part of the show which is Steve Wiseman's regularly scheduled slot. He certainly has made contributions to our understanding about identity theft in the segment you just heard. And for those of you just joining us at this point in the program, Steve is an expert on scams and fraud, and his website is scamaside.com. He's written Identity Theft Alert, 10 Rules You Must Follow to Protect Yourself from America's Number One Crime, published by Prentice Hall. He also wrote The Truth About Avoiding Scams, published by Prentice Hall. And now he's here again to talk about a Comcast-related scam. Steve.
Thank you, Michael. Comcast is one of the biggest providers of cable and internet services in the country. And their billing, oh, God help us with their billing, it can be far from simple, which makes them a tempting target for scammers. The latest Comcast-related scam starts with a telephone call to you or I, the potential victim, from a scammer who represents that he or she is a Comcast employee, calling to let you know about a new promotion, where if you make an additional $600 payment, you won't be billed for 6 months, and after that, you'll only be billed $99 a month. Now, because Comcast often does offer tempting and confusing promotions, the offer doesn't seem unrealistic. In addition, the scammer calling generally has information about yours and my, the victim's Comcast account, such as how long they've been a Comcast customer and the amount of the current bill that makes the call seem even more legitimate. However, here comes the catch. In order to take advantage of this offer, the victim's told that he or she has to use a Green Dot Money Pack cash card. Now, of course, once the victim sends that money via the cash card, the money is lost forever. And to make things worse, when the victim stops paying his or her regular Comcast bill, your Comcast services are going to be terminated. So once again, you can't trust anyone calling you on the phone to be who they say they are. And even if you've got caller ID, which I do, and I'm sure many of you do, love it. But it may say that it is Comcast calling. There's something called spoofing. And spoofing makes it appear that the call you're getting is from a legitimate source, even though in truth it's not. You should also be wary whenever anyone asks you for payment by way of a cash card, like these Green Dot money packs, or by wiring funds, such as through Western Union, because once those funds have been sent in those ways, they're impossible to get back. So if you ever get contacted on the phone with an offer you think might be legitimate, hang up. Contact the real company at a number that you know is legitimate to find out the truth. Now, in response to this particular scam, Comcast issued the following statement. We're aware of the Green Dot Money Pack scam in which victims receive an email or call offering them a promotional package for Comcast services. The call or email advises the victim to pay an upfront fee using a Green Dot Money Pack. While Comcast accepts Green Dot as one form of payment, under no circumstances would it be required in advance for services. We encourage customers to confirm promotional emails or calls that appear to be from Comcast by verifying the offer information on the company's official website, www.comcast.com, or by calling 1-800-COMCAST, 266-2278. So once again, trust me, you can't trust anyone. If you think it might be legitimate, you give Comcast a call, but they're not going to help you anyway.
Thank you, Steve. Very interesting indeed. And again, visit Steve's website, scamaside.com. Steve Wiseman, a regular feature of A Touch of Gray. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Kevin Casey. Thank you, Beverly Santanella, our producer on the front line. Most of all, thank you, Carol Marks, for the excellent work you do, making the world a better place in which to live through this show and all of your work. Visit her at atouchofgray.com. Gray is spelled with an E. And I'm Michael Harrison, the anchor of the program, inviting you to join us here next weekend for another installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups.